in the 13th chapter. It is, I think, no secret to all of you, fine Bible students, certainly that you are, and certainly as we've also been coming in through the chronological study material, you're beginning already to be reading about this man, David. I think, beyond all doubt, David is the single Bible character about whom we know more than any other. As much as we know about the life of Paul, for instance, we still have such a tremendous amount of material in the Old Testament about David that while I've not counted each and every individual verse, I believe he is the most prominent figure in the Old Testament, certainly, and maybe just for length of material that's dedicated to him in the Bible, the winner on that count as well. So we are just now embarking in our Wednesday night studies on a figure that God really wanted us to know about. This man plays a central role in all of both biblical and human history. This man's importance in the nation of Israel, in the preparation for the coming of their great King Jesus, who is now also our King, and the insights that God gives us into his personal character and thought processes is unparalleled. Now, I can say with absolute certainty that while it might possibly be that maybe because of the Gospels we would know more about, let's say, the personal life of Jesus than we do about David, David wrote the great majority of the Psalms, which is the biggest book in the Bible. And consequently, by virtue of those Psalms, we are given this massive amount of material, which now certainly eclipses that, that we learn in the Gospels. And all of this, I believe, is because of the 14th verse in 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 14 says, in prophecy from Samuel to King Saul, "Your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." At that moment in biblical history, Saul is rejected. Saul will die in shame along with his sons. Saul can no longer continue as king over Israel. You saw in last week's lesson, he was, in this same time slot, he had a magnificent start and much to commend him with his own behaviors in the beginning. And then he turned the corner somewhere and he failed spectacularly. God needed someone who thought like him, who felt like him, who was like him. God wanted, not like Saul, but like God. God wanted someone who was after his own heart. The heart of God is the heart of all things scriptural. The heart of God is the great responsibility that we have to mimic, to emulate. It is our purpose in life, each of us as Christians, to try and inculcate and then manifest to all the world the character, the personality, the virtue of the God of heaven who is our Father and who created us. And so it's my conviction that the reason God has given us this tremendous insight into this particular man, David, is because, thanks to what we learn in that verse, and like none other in all of biblical history, David had the heart that God wanted every one of us to have. He had a heart that was after God's, that is patterned after, that was like God's. And so when you're reading the history of David, complete with its spectacular failures as well, for he would, I think, get into a shouting match with Paul about who's the chief of sinners and have a pretty good case to plead now, wouldn't he? And so we know that he was not only a man who was profoundly dedicated to the service of his God, But he was a man who made mistakes as well. He was as frail and human and subject to the same trials and tribulations that we all are, and on occasion, like every one of us, you know, proved to have the Achilles heel. And so it's his response then, not only in eschewing sin and forsaking and avoiding sin, but also in response to his own sins, that sets him apart from everybody else. He is everything and exactly what God wants us to be from top to bottom, and whether we're getting it right or even when we're getting it wrong. So tonight what I'd like to do is we'll spend just a little time in only two chapters now. You can turn to chapter 16. And we're just going to try maybe to read between the lines a little bit and try to digest the very early information that is presented to us about this man. In chapter 16 and 17, what you'll see, again, I believe, is the foundation for all that will follow in the history. It's about the character of the man. So we'll look at a bunch of verses here tonight, but only in two chapters, and we will see that if you have that foundation, if you have that core, if you have this heart, then everything that follows in the rest of your life and whatever you confront, all the highs and the worst kind of lows that can befall you, you can do right, it'll be okay, and God will be proud of you if you're building on this same character foundation that we find in these two chapters. So let us begin in 1 Samuel chapter 16 and at verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons." Now, while we're spending so much time on my family, Don and I named our firstborn Jesse. And we did so because I had learned long ago that Jewish mindset is that, and you'll see this in one of Jesus' arguments when we get to the Gospels, but they had a sort of an ethic among themselves culturally that it was never possible for a son to be superior to his father. Every time you took a step backwards in your ancestry, you were getting better. Okay, and so we looked at this, we're casting about for a name for our son, and we thought, well, if there's no better than anybody in all of Israel, in Old Testament history, need a son, a name for our son, let's call him Jesse, that'll make him even better than David. Okay, so that's how all that got started. Well, now look, the Lord says to Samuel, who is somewhat simultaneously one of the best of all the prophets and certainly the most prominent of all the judges, "How long will you grieve over Saul?" So look, that time has passed. The man, you know, did all right for a while. He has failed. You've been here through his entire reign, and that's 40 years. You anointed him too. Now it's time to move on. And so, "I've rejected him. Fill your horn. Go. I will send you to Jesse," there in Bethlehem, "and I've selected a king for myself among his sons." Skipping down to verse 7, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I've rejected him,'" speaking of other sons, "'for God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" And now you see it there again. God had selected a man who was after his own heart. God does not view or judge things the way we do from physical standpoint. He's been looking into the heart of David, and he sees in that heart precisely what he next needs to lead this nation. So, turning now in the same chapter, or skipping now to verse 11 through 13, Samuel says to Jesse, David's father, with all these other sons, "Are these all the children?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest. Behold, he is tending the sheep." And then Samuel said to Jesse, "Send him, bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, which is just a word that means, when you looked at his face, it seemed to be healthy. It's the word that has to do with that pink hue, you know, or the redness that we typically associate with somebody who is, you know, in the flush of youth and is very, very healthy. And so ruddy is just to, you know, say that his complexion appears to be healthy and strong. He had beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. So while God does not look on the outside, he doesn't judge based on that, he's not swayed by that. Now, coincidentally, David certainly had those advantages as well, or at least those attributes. The Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Now, you will have read the other material, perhaps, in preparation for Wednesday's class. If you haven't already, you know, you will. We don't have time to look at all the verses there. But what had happened was a candidate parade. So we're interviewing for king. Bring out your sons. You know, let's go down through all of them. And one by one, every single one of them is rejected, which apparently was quite, an object lesson or a dramatic way of God saying through Samuel, I really know exactly what I want, and there are not to be any more arguments about it. I've looked at every single one that you've suggested from the whole family of Jesse, you know, and so it is this man David, and that's because of his heart. So, if there's a lesson to be learned, brethren, from David, the first thing you learn is that purifying your heart, preparing your heart, making certain that you understand, control, train, develop, you know, cause that heart to mature and perfect itself is of primary importance in God's mind. And having done so, makes you then worthy, fit, to serve him in any and all capacities. David was ready to do whatever it was that God wanted him to do. Now, by the way, he's about 20 years old at this point in time. He is just a kid, okay? He is just, you know, a kid at the age of 20. Now, who would think? This will be the next king of Israel. This will be 40 years. This is going to be, you know, dozens of chapters of history. This is going to be the Psalms. This is going to be one of the ancestors and through his family line and after which a dynasty is going to be named. You know, it is the throne of David that the Messiah, Jesus the Christ, Son of God, is going to inherit. And it is about David and the success of his kingdom then and the stability of that throne that we're going to have as a model for that of Jesus the Christ and in his kingdom. The lesson is recognize that out of your heart are the issues of life. Prepare that heart like David did. And as a matter of fact, then, in chapter 16, if you'll skip to 17, a little bit lengthier reading now, but there's quite a list of accomplishments that shows up in verses 17 through 23. So we're in 1 Samuel 16. We're going to start the reading at verse 17 and read all the way down to the end of the chapter. Saul's still living at this time. He's still king. So he said to his servants, provide for me now a man who can play well. I'm looking for a musician. Bring him to me. One of the young men answered and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, which is always good for PR and the kingdom. Okay? And what's the most important part of it at the end of that verse? The Lord is with him. This very young man has established himself in a wide variety of categories so that people are really taking notice. And what they associate with his success is not that it's all just attributable to him. The Lord is with him. We can see in that man's life, you know, that everything he touches prospers, I guess, but that also he appears to have the blessing, the approval of God himself. So Saul, at this point in life, having some problems looking for musical solution there, you'll read about it, I haven't got time for it tonight, then sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me your son David, who's with the flock. Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread and a jug of wine, young goat, sent them to Saul by David his son. So in other words, he made an offering to the king, a gift. And David came to Saul and attended him. Saul loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer, which is simply to say that he was as close an aide to the king as you could get. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, "Let David now stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight." We already have discovered he's found favor in God's sight. So it came about whenever the evil spirit from God came to Saul. It's an interesting study in itself. We'll not do tonight. David would take the harp and play it with his hand, and Saul would be refreshed and be well, and the evil spirit would depart from him. And we don't have the particulars on this. We're fascinated by it. Everybody wishes, you know, we knew more about it. But, you know, that influence of the evil spirit and David's near miraculous ability to heal, if you will, the Saul with this particular affliction by means of his skill as a harpist is going to remain an unknown. We don't know any more about it than you have right here, and what we have right here is not enough to really answer most of those questions. So, brethren, you know, I don't think the focus tonight or any other night, for that matter, would be, you know, upon that aspect of it, curious as it is. But it's the list in verse 18. Now, this is a man after God's own heart. This is a very young man in his 20s. This is a kid that his daddy did not, you know, look upon as a likely candidate to be king. And he put up a whole list of other sons, you know, before he even got to him. And in fact, he hadn't even invited him to the party. He had him out tending the sheep, you know, while the other boys were likely candidates. He didn't even look on David, you know, as being one, because apparently he's just entirely too young. He's just a child. But in 18, this young man said, "I've seen a son of Jesse who is, number one, a skillful musician." Brethren, you don't get there magically, and you don't get there miraculously, I don't think. David had dedicated himself to this discipline, and it takes a lot of discipline to become a skillful musician, as most of you can probably attest with regard to the arguments you had with your parents as a child who were forcing you to take piano lessons or something like that. You have to be into it. And with natural talent, you do not get a musician unless you couple it with a determination to practice, to learn, and to grow. He had then that spirit about him that could at a young age dedicate itself to the discipline necessary to master an instrument until he was the best in Israel. And dare we say, even in a spirit world, whatever this evil spirit business is about, you know, whether it's some sort of a reference to a physical malady or an actual, you know, demon possession type of thing, David's skill, you know, was appealing even there. That's quite a guy who's dedicated to that discipline. He is also a mighty man of valor and a warrior. Valor is a character trait. Valor has to do with courage. Valor has to do with determination. Valor has to do with not caving in the face of adversity. Valor frequently has to do with being able to lead others, you know, as well. So even at a very young age, he has mastered an art that's really noticeable, valor. In battle, he is described next as a warrior. Now, we're going to find out he doesn't have his own armor, but he has the ability here, and what other battles that even the Bible doesn't tell us about, you know, we'll never know. But he's impressed this guy, you know, as one of military discipline and success and mastery at a very young age. Here's an entirely different skill that David needed to devote himself and develop so that he had become a master in that area as well. He is next one that is prudent in speech. Now, I'm not sure that this would have anything to do with what I'm doing right now, you know, rhetorical ability. Prudent in speech more likely means that kid is smart. And if he gets in a disagreement with somebody, he's prudent when he speaks. If he needs to influence somebody or lead somebody or in any way, you know, needs to open his mouth, he's wise when he does it. When you're listening to David, it doesn't have to be in some great polemic, you know, presentation. But if you're just standing on a street corner talking to David, you would say, wow, that was well said. You know, that was well done. It was influential, the power of speech that he had. After all our studies in James, does anybody think, you know, that this is just a natural talent that you don't spend any time on? Well, I'm here to tell you, you know, you do have to work at that as well. And it requires not just a mastery of the language, but a mastery of self as well as an ability to read the needs of other people so that verbally you can meet them. Prudence in speech is wisdom in speech. That has to do with the choices he made about what to speak. He is everything James would have wanted out of somebody who had perfected themselves and mastered their bodies and, you know, able to avoid all sin, as we saw in James 3, because David had figured that mouth out and he knew how to handle it. And then it says, and handsome. Okay, well, you know, that's not from spending time in front of the mirror. He inherited that from Jesse and his mom. But the Lord's with him. Brethren, I would suggest to you, there's a host of passages to this effect. If you are one who has such control over yourself that you could become a skillful musician, one of valor, who is a warrior, that is prudent in speech, that whether you're handsome or beautiful or not, notwithstanding, the Lord will be with you. The Lord will be with you. I'm suspecting here, since the Bible spends so much time Old Testament and New telling us, you know, to acquire these character traits, that the Lord was with him because this young man had so dedicated himself at such a young age that with enormous and apparently unparalleled success, he had succeeded in becoming everything that God wanted him to be. And everybody's taking notice. There's just nobody like David. Now, why more of us have not done this is pretty obvious, isn't it? We just don't dedicate ourselves to it. So, number one point tonight, brethren, was purify your heart. The second point in that long list there is develop your talents, whatever they are. And when you do, with a heart like God's, and then devotion to the development of your talents, you will find favor with both God and humankind, God and man. Now, let's skip on down to chapter 17, verses 31 through 37. So into the 17th chapter now, verse 31. Now, obviously, skipping over a great deal, but coming down to this whole discussion now about the great Philistine Goliath, which everybody, you know so well, so you don't really need the backstory anyway, I suppose. Look at verse 31. David's been doing some inquiring on the front lines as he's listening to Goliath spout about how great and powerful he is. And in verse 31, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, David, 20 years old, says to the king in the face of the taunting of a giant in front of an army that has scared, you know, all the rest of the soldiers of Israel, David says, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Well, that's what had been heard. David's saying, there's nothing to fear here. It's just Goliath. You know, we're the people of God. And it impressed people. So they told the king. The king asked, and in 33, Saul says to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're but a youth. He's been a warrior from his youth. David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." Friend, can you imagine yourself when you were 20 making a speech like that to the king in front of the quivering army that's standing out there scared to death, you know, in the presence of this guy? This is a man after God's own heart. This is a boy who spent all of his teenage years with first the purity of heart and then the discipline to develop his every talent. And David said, "The Lord delivered me," verse 37, "from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear. He will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." But before you go any farther, remember the context here. This is not the king saying, "Well, okay, go to your death if that's the way you want it." Okay. This is not the king that came in and said, "Well, all right, have it your way." What is riding on the king's decision, and the king knows it? What does Goliath want? "You will surrender to me if I kill whoever you send out." When this king says, "Okay, kid, have it your way," then the whole ballgame of Israel, the kingdom, is resting on this kid. So you are looking at a young man who is not in the army, but who Saul knows as a musician in his court, a skillful harpist, that he is now going to entrust the whole kingdom to. Why in the world would a king do that? Because a person that is after God's own heart and who has found in favor in the sight of both God and man, and particularly who is skillful in his speech, you know, can persuade an individual. And that speech from a young man known as a king is enough for that king to say, "You know what? That spirit and that man is the best shot we've got. Because if we need anything, brethren, it is courage. It is certainty that God is with you." So he says, "Okay, we're gonna surrender, you know, the whole ball of wax to you." And of course, you know how it turned out. Well, it turns out like this in verses 38, 39, and 40. "Saul clothed David with his garments, put a bronze helmet on his head, clothed with armor. David girded his sword over his armor, tried to walk, and he'd not tested them. So David said to Saul, 'I cannot go out with these. We've not tested these.' And David took them off." He said, "I don't know any of this stuff. I'm not familiar with it. I'm trained with it." He took a stick in his hand, chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook, put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch, sling in his hand, approached that old Philistine, and you know what's happening next. But here doesn't know what happened next. Okay? If I think to next Wednesday, I collected quite a few small, smooth stones from the Valley of Elah when I was there in 2011. So we'll have a slideshow. I'll show you pictures, you know, at that time Wednesday night, you know, about this location. And to this day, that little brook seasonally runs through the valley. You know, and you can pick up these white stones. I brought a whole bunch of them home. I was heavier coming home than I was when I left for Israel. I brought a whole bunch of stuff. Okay, but what this is, brethren, is, you know, my point number three. You purify your heart. You develop your talents. Okay? And then, I don't know if this is really quite the biblical expression, but, you know, stick to your guns. Or maybe do what you know. Or, you know, maybe have confidence in yourself. Okay? But in the context where all the masters of warfare are trying to say to him, "This is how you do it, go do it," David takes all that stuff off and says, "Look, I'm going to do it my way." Now, this is a long time before Frank Sinatra. in his very famous song, you know, the same title, My Way. But brethren, it's also not hubris. It's not arrogance or conceit. You can develop your talents to such a degree with a pure heart that you can have every confidence in yourself and you won't need to yield to anybody when major decisions and maybe even kingdoms ride on the outcome. So, what David teaches us is that when you've mastered yourself so that both God and man, you know, speak well of you, then you can trust yourself to go out and do what you know to do. So here he is with five little rocks and a long strip of leather, you know, and off he goes for, you know, to save the kingdom. Now, we'll close tonight with verses 41 through 51. Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him, in front of the Philistine. He was actually facing two. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him. He's but a youth. He's ruddy with a handsome appearance. Now, you know, this Goliath must have been the most mystifying moment, you know, in his life. He looks out there. He sees a 20-year-old kid. And this ruddiness and this handsomeness, brethren, you know, I think goes to the fact, not just actually, you know, to the physical characteristics, but what happens to men when they've been in the field of battle for quite a while? Okay, you're living out there in tents and all of that, and you don't have that same pinkish kind of look to your face. What happens if you're out in the field of battle, you know, weeks on end? The sun bakes you down. After the redness of the sun burn, what happens? You know, your face turns dark, and if you've been out there, you know, for years and years as a seasoned warrior, we all know what happens to the face. It is what happened. You know, my grandpa's, for instance, who was very much an outdoors guy, and just all looked like leather when he was done. We talk about that. You know, so you got some real young upstart kid who's just, you know, pretty enough to head off to the prom. You know, it's not what you think of as a warrior, and this guy is just mystified by this. So he's laughing at him. And in verse 43, the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And then Philistine, you know, imagine the blasphemy and how David's reacting. And Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." And then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts." By the way, that's your word, Sabaoth. "The God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands. I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." We have a song, "The Battle Belongs to the Lord." As a matter of fact, Ron, see if you can chase that down. I've got about two more minutes here. "The battle belongs to the Lord." Ted, you may be more familiar with our supplement. Is it in the supplement?
Yeah.
I need to see the supplement, if you'll check there, Ron. "Battle belongs to the Lord." All that is derived from this verse right here. So, brethren, we have had these points out of David's life in two chapters as his career is just beginning. Number one, purify your heart. Determine that you will serve your God and nothing will deter you, and you will succeed at it, nothing short of perfection. If David did it, you can do it. Number two, develop your talents, whatever they are. I don't know what you have the abilities to do that God has given you, but whatever it is, you notice that you have a natural, you know, affinity for, then get after it and don't neglect it. Because it's not that you need to be a terrific musician. It is that you need to master yourself with such a discipline as music can do for you. And it'll bear fruit in every aspect of your life. Develop your talents is number two. The third one is have confidence, faith, let's say, in yourself. brethren, let's rise up and stand there on our own two feet and recognize that there is not a reason in the world for us to wilt as the people of God in the presence of anybody or anything ever. So, stick to your guns. You don't have to do things the way I do them. So I get out there and I teach these teachings. Here's how you bring people to Christ. And truth be told, I've been fairly successful at it. Employ my techniques if you like. Does that mean that there aren't any others but the ones I know? No. Get out there and bring the world to Christ. This is our mission. So, stick to your own guns. Have some confidence in yourself. Use your own tools is the, you know, that next point tied closely to the other. And then have the faith in your God and in yourself to just go open up the door and step out in a wide world and do the job. Okay? David is just a kid. Most of you in this room tonight, as I scan the room, have had more years as Christians than he'd had in life when he stood up to face Goliath for the kingdom in the name of God. If God is with us, then who can be against us? And if God is with us, then how can we fail? We cannot. That is the story of David.